You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Zoe, the world's first personal voice companion, enabling Star Trek comm badge-like interactions with Twitter, Facebook, Spotify, smart objects, and much, much more. To find out more about Zoe, visit zoe.me/trekfm. That's xowi.me/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
Tonight, or this morning, or this afternoon, whenever you're listening.
24-7.
24-7, baby. This is a grand old episode, and the reason why is because this is our 50th episode.
Yeah!
Yeah, 50!
I'd give a hip hip if I didn't feel like screaming in your ear holes, but for this 50th episode that we're doing, we felt like we wanted to do something a little bit special. And we're doing a character analysis of the good ship Voyager.
Fitting.
Yes.
I think it's fitting because we've done everybody from Janeway to Neelix. Mm-hmm. And everybody from Seven to Kes. And, you know, the writers and producers and everything like that really felt like Voyager was a member of the crew. Like, it was it was that extra character that had its own personality, had its own style, and I think we here at TTJ tend to agree.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. Here's the thing, guys. When I first heard Brandon Braga actually say those words, I saw it quoted, I thought it was the most ridiculous thing I had ever heard. But then you know what? No, he is right. And it's not just limited to Voyager. It's not even just limited to Trek. I mean, this goes across all sorts of sci-fi genre
Firefly.
Stuff. Right.
A hardcore Firefly. Whenever I think of another example, I have to think of Firefly. That has, like, that ship has its own moods and its own feelings. And yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And Voyager 2 has its own quirks and nooks and crannies. And I mean, Janeway talked to it quite a bit.
She did.
And I want to talk about that later in the show, because she starts doing it out of nowhere, and then all of a sudden it becomes a motif.
Yeah. So,
okay, so I'm a big ship nut, and so I just want to introduce this this sexy gal just right off the bat. We have the USS Voyager, NCC 74656, was commissioned in 2371, weighs some 700,000 metric tons, 15 decks, has a max sustainable cruise velocity of 9.975 warp speed, has phaser arrays, banks, spatial charges, torpedo tubes, quantum torpedoes, tri-cobalt devices, and of course, deflector shields. And it's at about a 116 to 118 meters in width, and the length is about 1,130. So this ship is not, you know, it's not massive. It's not a big ship. This is about the same size as Kirk's Enterprise.
Mm. Right. It's not the Enterprise D.
No. It is not the Enterprise D. It's not the Enterprise E. It is not, you know, when you see this ship, you don't quake in your boots. But the thing is, it was the most technologically advanced starship in the fleet
at the time.
At the time, which that time was only 1 year, because boom, First Contact came out a year after Voyager aired, and then we had the Sovereign class, which was a whole new branch of design when it came to Federation starships. And now that is a good looking ship, but I do believe that once we got into those kind of designs, we definitely lost some of the soul of the ships, because when you look at the Defiant, the Enterprise D, and Voyager, it all has that classic smooth and just, you know, curvature that we know and love from 90s Trek. And, you know, from the Prime Universe. And, you know, yes, you know, like First Contact is from Prime Universe, but that's a whole different area because it's in the movies. And that's when we also got the same kind of style of ship with not the Relativity, but the Equinox.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so with the Intrepid, with the Intrepid class, it was always heralded within the show and within novels and in comic books and everything like that. Like, this ship proved itself. It went 7 years without any kind of help from the Federation, not any kind of physical help or proximity help from Federation. And so this ship is a good ship, whether you like the design or whether you like the look of it or anything like this. This has tested its steel over and over again, which is actually a duranium, not a steel. A duranium alloy.
Nice detail there.
But, yeah, so I'm going to calm the geek down for a little bit.
Yeah, take it down a notch, would you? You're losing me.
I'm going to take it down a little notch. I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to stop droning on, and I want to hear what you guys thought. Let's treat this like a normal character analysis. So, Lori, I got to know. In Caretaker, when we first see the ship, what were you thinking? What were you feeling when Stotty was showing Tom the ropes?
I thought at first, oh, that's a really aerodynamic-looking ship. And then I thought, there's no air in space. But that's the blonde coming out in me. No, I thought at first, that must be really big because, I mean, I can't tell. You can't tell when it's sitting there in space dock how big the ship is. And then when you see it next to another ship, I don't know if we ever did that, but when you saw it next to that huge array thing in Caretaker, I thought, well, my gosh, that must be teeny tiny, like comparing a smart car to like a Hummer or something like that. But I thought it was really cute. I thought it was a cute little ship. Really.
It is cute.
After that, you know, I liked it more and more as the weeks went on. And I like the folding nacelles. That's just really cute. And I always wanted a model. I wanted one so bad from the beginning.
Me too.
And they cost a mint on eBay, so I've never acquired one. But I do have, like, a Hallmark ornament, but you can't fold the nacelle, so, you know, rip off.
Yeah.
I have the Hallmark ornament, too, and that was by far my favorite ornament, just because, like you said, it was so sleek. It was aerodynamic, and even though it's in space. And, and I think the reason for that is because when it goes to warp, you're actually riding the waves of warp. I think that was the in-universe explanation.
Okay. Yeah. It looks like a fish almost. So yeah.
Fish. Yeah, kind of.
I could see that.
Yeah. All right.
It's fins.
Mm-hmm. So Char, what did you think?
Well, that first glimpse we get after Stotty says that's Voyager, I fell in love. I really did. I love this ship too. I think it is a sleek looking, beautiful science vessel. I feel like it's a science vessel done right. It's not as huge as the Galaxy class. It doesn't need to be, and it shouldn't be. And it's this very fast little aerodynamic thing, and it, you know, had just incredible speed, the top you could possibly do at the time, never mind the whole threshold thing. And I thought it was a very cool looking ship. Just beautiful. I felt like it was done right. And I agree with you, Tristan, what you said earlier about from about the Enterprise E on, it's kind of different, the design that the Federation goes to. It's more warship. This is the last of the, oh, I don't know, the more carefree Federation? Do you even say, I don't even know if it's that, but it changes just a little bit to where, yeah, this one's just kind of got some sweet little curves and looks awesome. And I absolutely loved Voyager from the very start.
I like how you put it. It's a science vessel done right, because think about it. Now, there's, in video games and in manuals and things like that, we see lots of different designs, a lot of different ship designs. But the only other type of science vessel that we saw, really, was an Oberth class vessel that we saw in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. That thing was a punk vessel where it was just it was practically the USS Nancy Boy.
It was captained by Captain Nancy Boy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, it one shot, and then it got destroyed.
Right, it blows up. Because he's contacting Starfleet on, what should I do? Please help!
What should I do? I don't know. I don't want to screw up any regulations. Like, yeah, Janeway's like, that's cute. And
battle stations!
Yeah, so the thing is that this Voyager is small, it's meant for science, and it's meant for long-term science missions, thankfully, but it also has teeth, and that's one thing that we've always talked about with the Federation, that it's like, no, we're a diplomatic, you know, crew, like, we're a diplomatic organization, we're all about science and exploration, but we're gonna have a big-ass gun as well. And I think they learned from the Oberth class. Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned the nacelles going up, and I just want to talk about that for a second, and then see what you guys think. The nacelles going up, and I don't think this was ever addressed in the show, but it was in, like, the technical manual. It was a response to the warp speed limitation that was set in a TNG episode.
Oh, really?
Where if you go faster than warp 6, you're tearing up subspace. And so
yeah,
it was like
I remember that.
Yeah.
It was basically like the Fern Gully episode of The Next Generation where we need to save the rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, oh yeah, no, bro. If we just tilt them, boom, we can go as fast as we want.
Sure. Solves everything.
Sense.
No big deal.
Yeah. Right.
Makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, I think so. And another thing that's unique to Voyager that just made me lose my mind when I first saw it, it was in the 37s. And mm-hmm. right when I say that, everybody knows what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Because I just started screaming at the screen, like, no, seriously, they're really going to do this? And Janeway's like, Mr. Paris, why don't we land the ship? And we're like, oh, no, she didn't. And so what did you guys, even though this ship totally looks like it can't support itself on the ground, what were you guys feeling when that happened?
That's exactly what I was going to say, is how is this ship gonna stand on those little chicken legs? Because it doesn't seem plausible. But people have told me in the past, well, it might be the weight distribution on how it holds it together. It can do that. I'm still not buying it.
Yeah, they look like little bike kickstands. You know,
they do.
Let's just pop these out. Boom.
And but just imagine though, if they're like, okay, guys, either this has the heaviest butt in the history of anything engineered,
yeah,
or we're gonna have to create a little kickstand that comes out from the primary saucer, and that just kind of comes down. Or we just ignore it and say it's sci-fi, you know? And they were like,
"Right,
it's sci-fi.
Let's ignore it and just say it's sci-fi."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, that thought aside, though, landing the ship is pretty cool, and it does make sense for a science vessel to be able to do that. So
yes.
I thought that was pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
And it gave us something that we've never seen before, and that is something that I really like from Star Trek, is that there's something a little bit different every single time.
Mm-hmm.
And with the original Star Trek, we had a starship. That's amazing. And then with Next Generation, we're like, first episode, bam, you can have two starships in one. And
right.
then Deep Space Nine came around, and then, wow, we're on a space station. This is different. This is fantastic. And then they upped it again by saying, okay, we're going to have a tiny fighter vessel.
Right, yeah, the Defiant.
Yeah, and then Voyager's like, okay, what are we going to do? We're going to land the ship. It's progression, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Science vessel done right.
They each have their own little character traits. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, one thing we haven't talked about yet that we've got to bring up, bioneural gel packs.
Yes! Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yes, at the time, it was the state-of-the-art thing, and they were just starting to test this out, and Voyager was one of the first ships to have this technology. What do you think, guys, after 7 years, good idea or bad idea?
I don't know that they like the idea, since they probably, I don't think they ever did it again. A ship that can get sick, but
from cheese.
But I mean, just the thought that you could respond as quickly as a human brain can respond, that's pretty neat. That's a neat technological advance.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, go for it.
See, I'm with you, Lori. A little bit about how you're like, wow, yeah, the ship can get sick and you can't replace them.
Yeah, that's a problem.
You know, it's just like,
hang
you know,
on
think
now.
About Well, what? What?
Well, okay, granted, they had a supply they could replenish some of them with if one was defective or something, and they weren't expecting to be gone for 7 years. They could have gone to a starbase at any time and reloaded.
That is true, but what happens if that infection just ran through the ship and then all of a sudden you're done, you're dead in the water?
That's true, and then they do have to convert everything to isolinear chips, and it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
But there's always that. Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm just throwing it out there that I was like, hey, that's cool. Let's, you know, let's push the technological boundaries. And you know that I was talking about with Species 8472, I love the idea of bioships and integrating biotechnology and things like that. But the thing is, you can make as many isolinear chips as you want.
That's right.
And but, you know, also Voyager said, well, we can't reproduce photon torpedoes. And we kind of pushed that to the wayside. So,
yeah,
a little bit. Yeah.
One thing that really makes me laugh is that in Star Trek, they are so used to the computer being as fast as possible. And there was one episode in Next Generation where the computer was acting a little slow, and it was for reasons we don't need to get into, but it was called Future Imperfect, where Riker was like the captain of the ship, and it was like 10 or, I don't know, 20 years in the future or something.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it just, the computer just hesitated like a couple of seconds, and you could just see Riker go, ugh! Come on.
Kind of like what we do when we see the little spinny wheel of death.
Exactly. Like, we have not evolved as humans. Just the technology has lessened our nerd rage when it comes to slow bandwidth. So I can understand the need to constantly try to find the best. Like, if I could have a computer that was, okay, you can either have an old one that's always stable, or it could get the flu and die, I would probably choose the fastest one, because I was like, I'll take the risk.
Well, and
but that's just me.
It's human nature. We are greedy. We want the best. And we'll take that risk if it means getting the best. Stability is boring.
It's true.
I'm not handing you guys my money to invest, then. Forget it.
Aw, dang it. There goes my next idea.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the outside of the ship and a lot about the like the little technical details and inside and the geranium hull and the design. But let's talk about the guts a little bit. Let's talk about the rooms that we visit the most. And, I mean, let's see. We have the bridge, of course. We have engineering. We have sick bay, which I think we've spent more time in sick bay than any other show.
Oh, by far, yeah.
Yes.
We have the holodeck. And then later, stellar cartography.
Yeah, astrometrics, yeah.
Astrometrics, yeah. So what did you, like, did you guys have a favorite place? Did you think one defined the ship over the other? What do you guys think?
Well, I think we got to start with the bridge, because that is the defining area of any starship. I mean, the original Enterprise, as opposed to the Enterprise A, in various carnations even, to the Enterprise yeah. D, to Voyager, each one has a very distinct look and, I would dare say, personality. And I feel like for Voyager, it's, you know, it's got all those nice kind of neutral, sleek-looking colors with chrome gray and that sort of thing. And it just kind of has... I've heard people say it's boring, but I feel like over the years, it has aged better than the Enterprise D in terms of its color palette.
Okay, well, okay, yes, in terms of the color palette, because you can't go wrong with the dark grays and the blues with the red accents. You just can't go wrong, because that is Starfleet. But you're right, with the Enterprise D, you have the beige, and then the other beiges, and then the slightly darker beige, and...
that pinkish color.
But the thing is, you can't go wrong with that arch that the D had.
Okay, yeah.
You know, that's such a classic... the classic arts. But one thing that I really liked about the Voyager bridge is the con was massive.
Mm-hmm.
And that entire section was just devoted to flying the ship. You knew that this thing could move. This thing was built for maneuvers, and you needed a galactic class pilot on the helm.
Yes, which we got.
I thought that was cool, but yeah, I think that was one design element that I really liked.
What did you guys think about center seat, first officer's chair? Boom, central.
I didn't like that the first officer was on the left.
Why?
Because right-hand man.
Is it just because of Riker? You got so used to him being on the right, or just the figure speech?
It's the figure of speech and Riker. I'm a huge Riker fan, as you know.
Yes.
And, you know, I missed that the first officer wasn't on the right-hand side. I also missed that you didn't have a third seat for the useless counselor.
I didn't miss that, for the record.
I'm just kidding.
Neelix would have been there the whole time.
Oh, that's so true. That totally would have been Neelix's seat.
It would have been.
I sense a Photoshop coming on. A hybrid of Neelix and Counselor Troy's skin tight bodysuit.
Please don't give ideas.
Too late. It's a good thing I don't have time to do this anymore, guys.
But yeah, so Lori, what did you think?
I like the fact that it was so dark. I like that so much. I don't know what it was, and then when they went to red alert, it was even darker.
It does get dark,
like,
doesn't
that.
It?
That was really cool. It was
it kind of puts that tension in the air, right?
Yeah, it really did. And the only thing I thought was really weird, I liked the darkness, but I thought, was it just me, or did there seem like there was an enormous amount of space between where the con was and everybody else?
There really was. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the only thing, but I'm sure they needed that. I don't know. It
Flyboy
seemed like they
needs
could have
his
done
space.
It away. Yeah, he needed everybody to be away from him. Back off now. Got to make decisions.
Let the master do his work.
That's right. That was the only thing. Everything else just was... I liked where everything was placed. It was just nice. I don't... Mm-hmm. For me, the D with the ramps and all that, that was a little muchish. I liked the stairs.
God, I loved it.
Tristan's getting nostalgic for the D right now.
I know. It was wheelchair accessible. You know?
It was. It was. I'm not knocking that. I don't know.
Yeah, the wood, it was total 80s, like with the beige and the wood finish. And
It was, but that's what gave the D its character, for sure.
That's right.
That arch was defining.
Mm-hmm.
But for Voyager, I feel like it's such a clean look. I'm a clean type of look person. I was attracted to it from the beginning. But let's move from the bridge to what I consider the other defining element of a starship, and that is engineering. Yeah. What did you think about that?
Very distinct warp core. Very distinct. We've never seen anything like it. And just, I don't even know how you would describe that effect, but it was just so different. And they really didn't give an explanation why. You just know that the set designers were just like, you know what would be cool if we did this instead?
Yeah, I feel like it had a much more intricate look than the D did. And not to knock the D, because it's got a cool warp core too, and you know that that's the heart of that ship, but same with Voyager. I feel like that warp core, you just feel it. If it's not in good shape, the ship is in trouble.
Yeah. Yes. Because with the D and any other drive, it, like, the speed of how the lights rotated let you know how fast it was going. And with the Voyager engine with warp drive, you could, if it was completely grayed out, you're like, oh, holy crap, crap's going down.
Right.
Or if it was just like, if it was really blooming with color, you're like, oh, they're going really fast or something's happening. Like, you could, like, it was instantly, you instantly knew exactly what was going on.
And if Q Jr. is on board, it becomes a disco.
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like, I think that should have been used more often, I think.
You know, I really did like that look, and they should have had more parties in engineering.
They probably did.
But yeah, if somebody... But if you do it in the mess hall and somebody spills their drink, you don't have a possibility of a warp core breach. You know?
Right.
So, just throwing that out there.
Well... Don't forget, though, in Timeless, I mean, they break a bottle of champagne on it.
It
spills all over that.
That's true.
Yeah. And that was fine, and there's confetti everywhere, and I mean, someone's got to clean that up.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, that's very true.
That is true.
I thought engineering was very cool. I felt like a lot of work happened in engineering and not just... I don't know how to put this. I mean, because, like, on the Defiant, you didn't really... Like, it was like a closet. You know, engineering was basically like a closet. And in the D, you know, a lot of work would happen, and they'd test a few things here and there. But you could just really tell that B'Elanna got her hands dirty in engineering.
Mm-hmm.
It was very physical, and I really, really like that.
I like the way they used it as like a second bridge. Whenever something went wrong, we're like, oh, this is where we're going to meet up. This is where it's all going to go down.
It's absolutely true. Yeah, if the bridge has a problem, they all regroup in engineering. How many times did we see that? Good point.
Yeah, I think the first time that we saw that successfully happen was in Deadlock. I mean, they tried to get to engineering a few times before, like in Twisted, but I think it was a great space and they used it well.
I agree.
Another room that I'd love to talk about, and we're coming up on our time, but I don't really care. So, is sickbay. Now we saw sickbay a lot in The Next Generation, and we saw it a lot in TOS, and we saw it a little less in Deep Space Nine. But the thing is, we had much longer scenes in sickbay with Voyager, and we had more storylines take place in sickbay. Now, granted, we had a few Beverly episodes here and there, and people would go to sickbay a lot, but very few episodes took place mainly in sickbay, and in Voyager, it was all the time.
Yeah.
Largely in part because of the Doctor.
Absolutely. He's trapped.
That's right.
For a good portion of the show.
Yeah, at least at first, before the mobile emitter comes along, they have no real choice but to go to sickbay and interact with him.
My favorite part of sickbay is that one bed that you can put the force field around. That is so super cool.
Do you mean the one where the control panel goes over you?
Yeah, the shell thing that goes over people. That's really cool.
That looks like an iron lung.
Like
Neelix needed an iron lung.
Right. Yes.
They put him in.
Yeah, if I recall, that's the one they use for surgery.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
And this one also had a morgue, like, right off the side. Like, on the D, it was a different room. But this one is like, oh, yeah, this is where the dead bodies go. You can see everything. I've never seen a more open sick bay.
Right. Well, and you know what? I guess that was important because a lot of people died right from the get-go in Caretaker. They had to have a morgue right off the bat.
Yeah.
That's true. And one thing that I never understood is that there's no privacy in a sick bay.
No.
No.
There's got to be a bathroom somewhere. There's got to be somewhere you can change. There's got to be.
No, the Doctor wants to watch.
Yeah. He's just like,
oh, voyeur. What's wrong with you?
Not a peeping Tom.
It's not like I haven't seen human anatomy before.
Like how we said, everything's a little bit different on Voyager, and the holodecks were very different from TNG and everything. Yeah, and important. Like, you know, with TNG, we had, like, the square block pattern, and in Deep Space Nine, we had holo suites, which were smaller, and then just had, like, these green displays. And in Voyager, we had these really cool crisscross rod pattern that was really neat.
Yeah, I feel like that was a nice, cool improvement in, well, at least the look of holodeck technology.
Yeah, the aesthetic, you know? It was more tactile than anything else. Like, it wasn't just a blank checkerboard. It was something that you could see producing a signal.
Right, yeah. It wasn't this abstract thing. Yeah, it was tangible. And the holodeck was incredibly important to Voyager as a result of its journey because, hey, you know what? Everybody gets cabin fever. You've got to get out and have some fun every now and again. And largely for the crew, that was spending time on the holodeck.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we had Sandrines, Fairhaven. Janeway had her awful holo novel with the bratty kids. We had Velocity. We had Captain Proton. I mean, so many times on the holodeck. As much as the Enterprise D had holodeck episodes and holodeck malfunction episodes, Voyager definitely has its share.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, they were not immune to that. You know, like, as I'm thinking about it and, like, the rooms that we spent the most time in, do you know the one room that never changes even from TOS on?
Which one?
The transporter room.
Hey!
Yeah, that's right.
Good call!
It changes colors, maybe a little bit, but it's, like, up until, like, even the Abrams one, like, the most that they did was just, for some reason, make it convex, like a convex bubble on it, which is, I don't understand that at all. Why, like, instead of standing on a pad, you stand on a bubble. But no, think about it, like, from TOS, from the movies, to Deep Space Nine, to Voyager, they all look exactly the same.
Yeah, by and large, they do. That is probably, the most unchanged room in all of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like, I guess if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's right. Don't reinvent the wheel. It's already good.
Well, even though the transporter may be never changing, one thing that is always changing is Trek.fm, because we're constantly giving you new things to talk about and new things to listen to. And here's something that you might have missed this past week.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Kirk versus computers.
Like there was some kind of salesman going around selling this life-controlling model.
It's like the iMac, you know? Everyone had an iMac back in 1999 or whatever it was, right? The Bondi Blue Andrew.
Earl Grey.
Data. I think the only other time we see Data in red is, I think, in one of the parallel jumps in Parallels.
Yeah. I think it's Future Imperfect, maybe.
With that funky comm badge.
Is Data in red kind of like the song Lady in Red?
Data in red.
The Orb.
The Jordan Prophecies.
Well, you know, I was thinking that Horan was probably not so much a prophet as a Bajoran songwriter who just wrote really bad lyrics.
The Ready Room.
Or the Uniform.
Because, I mean, I didn't see Eddington feeling he was the bad guy in this.
Oh,
he was doing what he believed in.
Yeah.
Where I think Sisko seemed to me, you know, he definitely started to white whale on this.
To the journey!
Samantha and Naomi Wildman.
She acted like a normal kid, except extremely smart.
Yes. Yeah, granted, even though she was incredibly bright, because all Trek kids are, they're extremely advanced in the 24th century, she wasn't annoying like Wesley.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The Black and Cushman interview.
Gene didn't really delve into anything with any depth. I think he played the cards very close to his vest. He knew what he wanted, and he made sure he got it. And that's why he rewrote writers, and that's even why he rewrote me.
Warp 5.
The Temporal Cold War.
But as you say, with Arch, or Future Guy, if we were to assume it's Archer, he's not just making, you know, changes on a small detail or trying to recapture, you know, in Anorex's case, it's getting his wife back.
Right.
He's looking to completely change the course of history on a much broader scale.
Trek News and Views.
The Data Network.
With the Data Network, I wanted something that the Star Trek fans had already there. They didn't need to do anything. They just had to come along and be the Trekkie selves.
Literary Treks.
Warren Ivory.
Yeah, I thought that was great that they finally explained that question that you had, why there are no gateways within the Bajoran system, and that's not necessarily true, and that the fact is that the Iconians know the prophets.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So be sure to check out all of these shows. Get your daily Trek Talk fix. You get a new show every day, sometimes more than one show, and we are available on basically any platform that you can think of. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone. It doesn't matter what you have. You can find us. So if you want to do that, you have the option. Or if you prefer, go to trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory. You get all the links from there. And before we go, let's have a quick word from our sponsor.
Zoe, the world's first personal voice companion. You can find out more about this Star Trek comm badge-like device and support their Kickstarter campaign by visiting zoe.me/trekfm. That's xowi.me/trekfm. Remember to include the Trek FM portion of the URL, so when you visit, Zoe knows you heard about it here on Trek.fm. Also, if you would like to personally support Trek.fm, please go to trek.fm/donate. There you can get exclusive themed badges and art prints that we use to thank you for your contribution, and their original illustration by Tobu Ushi. Everything you donate to Trek.fm is used to cover the cost of production, storage, and bandwidth needed to bring you this programming every week.
All right, well, that wraps it up for our episode. Now, in this episode, we mainly talked about the aesthetic of the ship, the design, the features, how cool it looks, and how cool it is on the inside and the out. But one thing that we're going to hold off until another episode, not next week, but another episode down the line, is we're going to talk about how this ship, this bucket of bolts, became a home to the Voyager crew instead of just another ship. But next week, we hope that you do tune in, because a very good friend of To the Journey, Gene Russell, sent us an email asking us, how did we cope after Voyager made it home and our fictional friends basically left our lives, how did we deal with that? I think that's a genius question. And instead of emailing you back, Gene, we're going to make you an episode.
How about that?
We're going to make you an episode to answer that question. I guess I keep saying this. One last thing before we go is this is a two hallmark episode where this is the 50th episode, but also this is the last episode of Lori as a regular onto the journey. She is moving on to join Section 31, and she's just able to tell us and you guys.
That's right. If I tell you where I'm going to go, I have to kill you.
Of course, of course. Yes, but we do hope you'll pop in for a visit every now and then.
I plan to. I definitely will.
Good.
So all you listeners out there, this is not the last time you're going to hear Lori onto the journey. She's going to become a special guest appearance, kind of like Dr. Pulaski, but much nicer.
Yeah, definitely.
So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!